Today, Jamie Struthers will share his thoughts about Easter and Unitarians, followed by discussion. He will be basing his presentation upon an excerpt from Reverend Scotty McLennan's book, Christ for Unitarian Universalists, A New Dialogue with Traditional Christianity. Jamie has been a part of the fellowship from a very young age. He also has recently completed an MA in Leadership Studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School. After the presentation, there will be time for discussion of ideas. This will be moderated by Joanne. Welcome, Jamie.
Good morning and happy Easter, everyone. It says here in the script that, again, we're happy to see that March is going out like a lamb. Well, sort of missed it by about that much. Today, Easter Sunday is almost certainly the most significant date in the Christian liturgical calendar. The celebration of the story of the resurrection of Jesus is central to the Christian faith. Notwithstanding our Christian roots, many current Unitarian Universalists, I think, have a somewhat uneasy relationship with some, if not most, Christian doctrine. This includes, I believe, that doctrine relating to the resurrection of Jesus and its deep theological significance. I must admit that I'm one of those whose relationship with this doctrine is also rather fraught. I also think that in this fellowship we have dealt with our collective discomfort by assiduously avoiding the subject. I believe that we are not alone in taking this approach. So when this service somewhat fell into my lap, it seemed to me that it might be interesting to open the door, if only a crack, to some exploration and hopefully some discussion concerning the Easter story and the significance of and possibly the definition to be assigned to resurrection. In searching for material for this service, I happened upon a homiletic excerpt from the book Christ for Unitarian Universalists, a New Dialogue with Traditional Christianity, written by Reverend Scotty McLennan, a UU minister and a lawyer, I liked him already, and educator, currently teaching ethics at Stanford, following a long career as a university chaplain at Tufts University. He writes as follows, based upon the text of the Gospel of Luke. And again, and I quote, "Few Unitarian Universalists believe that there was a physical, photographicable resuscitation of Jesus' corpse. Few believe that Jesus knowingly sacrificed his life to atone for the sins of humanity, or that only by his sacrifice and our belief in him as our Lord and Savior can each of us individually be saved. There is very little biblical evidence for those claims. Unitarian Universalists primarily speak, if we use the term at all, of resurrection within our own lives, before our physical death. This type of resurrection, of course, includes the apostles' experience, perhaps by vision, dream, or mystical experience, or otherwise altered state of consciousness, of Christ being present to them after his death and turning their lives around so they could be reborn to teach and preach and heal and challenge the status quo of their day." The Reverend Carl Scoville explains in An Easter Faith that the resurrection comes with a recognition that any of our lives can always be transformed and begin again. The resurrection comes with the Christ within us breaking forth as if from the tomb, inviting us to be reborn by reenacting the Christ or enacting the Christ self we had forgotten or in fact had never known. Innumerable resurrections have happened again and again. By experiencing the risen Christ in their lives, people have stopped drinking, changed jobs at great risk, and held their ground before dictators, and much more. The website of the Unitarian Universalist Association explains that although the Easter service is one of the most well-attended of the year in our denomination, we do not take Jesus' resurrection literally. We emphasize the metaphorical. We talk about the ultimate triumph of life over death. We also speak of many kinds of resurrection, including the rebirth of nature, the resurrection of hopes and dreams, and the renewal of dead relationships. In What's a UU Family to Do on Easter, Michelle Richards acknowledges that a number of Unitarian Universalists have no problem celebrating Christmas, a holiday marking the birth of Jesus, but balk at our commemorating his resurrection, which they find to be contrary to their own beliefs. So most of us begin by simply seeing Easter as a spring equinox holiday. Think of the way we often domesticate Easter. How many sermons have I heard and preached on springtime themes of how good it feels for the earth to come alive again all across America and the rest of the Northern Hemisphere? How many times have I heard gentle stories about the season of fertility, of Easter eggs and Easter bunnies, of chicks and ducklings and lambs? But Luke's account of the disciples experiencing Jesus' resurrection shouts at us with phrases like terrified, bowed their faces to the ground, and amazed by what had happened. For these followers of Jesus had just gone through an unimaginably traumatic experience. Their beloved leader, who had been called the Messiah of Israel and the King of the Jews, had been horribly tortured by Roman soldiers in Jerusalem only 3 days earlier and then publicly executed by the hideous act of nailing him to a cross. These were demoralized people who scattered and tried to avoid being associated with Jesus at the end, leaving only a few loyal women like Mary Magdalene and perhaps a single man at the foot of the cross. Imagine how utterly astonished the male disciples must have been when Mary and the other women brought the news of the empty tomb. Astonished, yes, and hopeful, for the women had been told, why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here but has risen. I mean, could it be true? Was there some hope after all? Although these words seemed only an idle tale to most of the male disciples, who didn't believe the women, Peter's astonished hope got the best of him. He jumped up and ran back to the tomb himself, finding the stone rolled away and only the linen cloths in which Jesus' body had been wrapped remaining within. At that point, his astonished hopes must have been overwhelming. We need to be open to resurrection, looking up, not down, listening, not stopping up our ears, tasting before we swallow, smelling the flowers, not passing them by, feeling deeply rather than numbing ourselves with the daily routine. As another Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Dr. Richard Gilbert, has written, A tomb is no place to stay when each morning announces our reprieve. And we know that we are granted yet another day of living. A tomb is no place to stay when life laughs a welcome to hearts which have been away too long. Resurrection has had and does have many meanings for Unitarian Universalists, specifically related to Jesus Christ, because his disciples came to believe that he was alive again with them, primarily in a spiritual sense. A religious movement was launched. It has given individuals and groups hope for 2,000 years that they can find positive personal rebirth and transform beloved communities here and now animated by him. We Unitarian Universalists have picked up that striving for individual fulfillment, and in our passion for social justice, loving our neighbors and even our enemies as ourselves. Again, the words of Scotty McClellan, and again for emphasis, the thesis presented by Reverend McLennan clearly expressed is this: we need to be open to resurrection, looking up and not down, listening, not stopping up our ears, tasting before we swallow, smelling the flowers, not passing them by, feeling deeply rather than numbing ourselves with the daily routine. Sometimes when one's looking for the answer to a question, it would be prudent to stop looking when one finds an acceptable answer. And preparing for this presentation this morning, I did not. And ran across a short piece written by Reverend Molly Gordon of Columbia, Missouri, a UU minister there, a part of which I would like to share. As I indicated earlier, in the passage from Reverend McClellan, which I've just read, the author bases his text upon the Gospel of Luke. Reverend Gordon makes reference to the same story from a somewhat older source, the Gospel of Mark, and takes a somewhat different approach. In her article, Reverend Gordon raises a number of questions and opines as follows. And again, the words of Reverend Molly Gordon. Could Jesus really rise again? Could it really be that the violence of the empire and the pain of loss would be denied the final word? In that ancient telling, we don't get an answer. There is no resolution. There is no certainty. There is only a seed of complicated hope and the persistence of human love to help it grow. What strikes me about the ancient text is that it was not only Jesus who rose up that morning. It was also the women who loved him, who rose up from the pit of their grief to tend to him. It was also the movement that his teaching sparked, a community who rose up to spread his message of power in weakness and the victory of love. Is new life possible? Is love stronger even than death? The question itself invites us to rise up and live as if it were true, to make it true in our living. The lesson for the women, for the forces of the empire, and for us is this: you can crush love down, cover it over, bury it, but it will rise. It will reach for the sun, and we will reach for each other. Love will have the final word, even if that word is just a question, a wild possibility, a whisper to rise and follow wherever it may lead. Communities formed and nurtured in love will rise up and for and with each other again and again. If we've learned nothing in these years, it is this. Even when everything is uncertain, even when we are grieving, even when the loss keeps coming, even when we are forced apart, even when we are bone weary, we keep reaching for one another. We keep rising in love. I do not know that I can add much to the words of Reverends McClellan and Gordon, and will accordingly leave the matter there. So may it be, now and always. Blessed be. I'd like to open the floor to any comments or discussion.
Comment? Oh, okay. David?
Thanks, Jamie. That's a difficult topic to work with. Something I was thinking about as you talked about Easter was that, of course, you know, a lot of us look at Easter in the Christian tradition as being overlaid on many other previous religions with spring festivals, with resurrection festivals, you know, because that's not unique to Christianity. And I think that the renewal by spring, at least for us in the Northern Hemisphere, is more obvious and more easy to understand and more tangible. And so the Christian layer on top of that can be kind of ignored, and you can still, oh, it's spring, you know, spring calibration. So I don't feel a great need to grapple with the Christian, I'll call it mythology. However, the traditional way of approaching it seems to be to connect, or Unitarian way, typically, as you're saying, the second minister is typically to connect it to spring festivals and so forth. Maybe not exactly, but closely. I'm not quite clear. Are you recommending a good way of trying to, trying to work with these concepts, the Christian concepts?
Well, again, I think that I certainly don't. I don't come with any answers, and I would simply want to raise the questions. We have a couple of different competing versions of how we deal with that. Reverend McClellan and certainly Reverend Gordon come to somewhat different conclusions. And that's not to say that either one has the definitive answer. And I would suggest there really likely isn't a definitive answer. But I just want to open the discussion. I think that it's something that we don't talk about a lot. And the reason that I wanted to raise it today, this is probably the most important sort of day in the liturgical calendar in Christianity. We do have Christian roots, and I think that sometimes we gloss over that, and so I wanted to take this opportunity to simply raise the issue and get that discussion going.
I'm looking to see, Sandra and Deborah. Oh, they're both saying she can go first.
mine's not a question, but basically a statement. I question Christianity, but I think that's good. But I also remember being raised in a home with Christianity, and Easter was one of my favorite holidays, because that was, we got our Easter hats and our new little Easter coats and our shiny patent shoes. And I just remember it bringing so many families together at one time and forgetting about all the horrible things that were happening at that moment. So I'm not saying that can't happen all the time, but it has held a special childhood spot within my heart. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah.
I have to add on to the new clothes also. Memories of first days of spring and the water running in the streets. Can't wear your new shoes. But you can play in the puddles as soon as you get your clothes changed after church, right? Oh, nice memory. Okay. As I was listening, I kept thinking, wow, things have changed in my way of thinking about things over the years. And I was just so glad to be here, sitting in the seat in the Unitarian Center with other people who support the same principles that I do and that aren't expecting me to believe something. And for years, I pondered about, could this be true? Is this true? And I read a lot and so forth, but I could never come to a conclusion. And then one morning early before I got up, it was a light bulb went on and said to me, I had the insight, it's not about belief. Life is about understanding and evolution. And things that are in the Bible are examples of ideas of resurrection, rebirth, change, transformation. So now I think more about, when I think about the texts, the Christian or Jewish or Buddhist or whatever, the different texts, as being examples of higher ideals, higher ideas, and not, do you believe this particular thing, but this is an example of rebirth, transformation, change, of sacrifice, and yeah. Anyway, it was good to be sitting here thinking of the freedom I now have, that I don't have to be in contortions to to prove a belief rather than live by the wisdom. Yeah.
If I could just comment briefly, again, if I read you correctly, the question is not whether it happened just that way, but are there truths revealed? And that's the way certainly that's my take on it.
Okay, I see Pam, and I'm just going to see if there's any hands raised online. I don't see any, so Pam.
Yeah. I find it interesting. We do have readings in our singing the living tradition, but they're to do with love, kindness, compassion, you know, like things like the Sermon on the Mount and other sayings. And then I'm going to mention about my son, you know, is going to a United Church in Winnipeg, but till very recently they had a minister who I think would have been more comfortable as a Unitarian, because he was very open about not himself believing in the resurrection, but, you know, as a myth and the meaning and, you know, rebirth, think going to new things. And I found that interesting, but I don't know how he could handle the rest of the dogma, which is still there in the United Church. And because it's such a Unitarian way to look at a lot of things, see what the message is that we can take out of it, like renewal.
One of the things, again, if we look at the stories, one of the things that pops up this morning, and I didn't go into any detail, but We have a couple of different gospels saying a couple of different things. And so we have the, you know, firstly, we have the Gospel of Mark being for the first in time. That is somewhat more bare bones in terms of the story. And we then have the later the Gospel of Luke, which adds to it. And so, you know, if we're looking for one unified story, we're going to have a little bit of problems, okay? In terms of principle, maybe not as much.
I see Jane.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you so much, Jamie. That was really thought-provoking. The piece that grabbed me the tightest was the bit where you said there's power in weakness. And it made me think right away about our hymn, When the Poor Ones Keep on Giving. And so many other places, I guess, in our hymns and in our readings where we think about power in weakness. And you mentioned that it was the women who kept the faith and who were at the tomb and brought the good news and probably did the cleanup work too. Not that women are weak, but there's power in being underestimated, maybe. Yeah, and the piece that went with that was that when you're uncertain and weary, we reach for each other. And I think we do that here, and I just want to say thanks for that. It's a wonderful thing, a blessing. Thanks.
I don't see any other eager hands. I'm remembering when I first arrived here and Easter was a bit of a parody actually, and hats, and you know, it wasn't and it was a particular flavor of the congregation at the time, which it was fun, but I'm thankful that it has changed to where we are now, which is more inclusive of many different ideas.
Thank you very much.